Welcome to Series 2, Episode 3 of Encounter Points. Welcome to this third episode of our second series of Encounter Points. I'm Bill Schmidt.
And I'm Ken Hellenius.
Now, Ken, last week we talked about sacramentals and how we encounter secular versions of them in an everyday life.
Indeed. And this week we're going to encounter sacramentals that come from our faith life.
Our what life?
Zunes!
Bless me, I believe we have another episode starting of our Encounter Points series on incarnational piety.
I think you're right. I think it's a marvelous idea.
I do too.
Let's get started.
Okay, great. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And welcome into this conversation, Ken and our listeners, because we are going to talk about blessings and their role in sacramental, incarnational life. As Catholics and as Christians, and there are lots of different wonderful examples of how we are called to fill our lives with blessing, and we do fill our lives with blessing. Am I right, Ken?
Yeah. Well, and we are called to. I think that's a really good way to describe it. Especially those of us who are baptized.
Right.
Because we are baptized into the priesthood of Jesus Christ. And
that's
so
right.
This is, mm-hmm. I mentioned it last week. We were talking about sacramentals in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. So when we talk about sacramentals as things that are blessed and that bless us,
right,
the Church actually says in paragraph 1669 of the Catechism, sacramentals derive from the baptismal priesthood. Every baptized person is called to be a blessing and to bless.
I love that.
Hence, lay people may preside at certain blessings. The more a blessing concerns ecclesial and sacramental life, the more is its administration reserved to the ordained ministry. So specifically, the Church is saying, look, things that we encounter, kind of individually,
right,
things that we use maybe in our house, in our what's called the domestic church.
Yeah.
These are things that it's appropriate for lay people to bless because we're the ones who are encountering it and using it.
Yes.
The more it gets used in a liturgical setting or by a wider community, the more we need a representative, a leader of that community to bless it, the more it's appropriate and reserved to them. So
right,
such the things that we use in the church are going to be blessed by a member of the ordained clergy because right, they are the ones who are the leaders in our church. But here in the Southbrook Studios,
right,
when I look here and I say, well, gosh, this Holy Hand Grenade of Antioch right here,
uh-huh,
this would be because I would use it here in the studio. I would be the appropriate one to bless this if it needed a blessing. This is, of course, a classic from the Monty Python film, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh, my gracious.
The Holy Hand Grenade of Antioch.
I love it.
It is one of the relics Brother Maynard carries.
Is that right?
Yes.
And it's inspirational, therefore, for all sorts of reasons. At
well,
least
you
the,
mentioned
the,
earlier that we yes, weren't going to have any jokes. And I,
yes,
so the least I could do is at least have a humorous thing. Thank God this is actually just an audio podcast and not video.
Yeah.
I would have to clean up the office and the studio, but still.
All right.
That's not why you called, as they say. So when I think about blessings, Bill, I think about things that, we as lay people, as members of the baptized into the priesthood of Christ, we bless things all the time, whether or not we're conscious of them as blessings.
Yeah.
For example, one of the most iconic signs, sacramentals of the Catholic Church is the sign of the cross.
Yeah, exactly.
We sign ourselves all the time, right?
Yes.
We sign ourselves when we begin our liturgies. We sign ourselves perhaps when, I know it's a traditional thing, when you hear a siren, you might sign, make the sign of the cross and offer a quick prayer for whoever is being, in the ambulance or whatever. We sign ourselves when we pass by a church
right?
As a sign of reverence toward Christ and the tabernacle inside. So the sign of the cross is the one of the most iconic Catholic blessings.
Yes, it's a beautiful one. I noticed, I did not watch all 4 hours of the coverage, but I did notice in the coverage of the royal wedding that the Archbishop of Canterbury presided, I presume, at the end of the service, he did indeed bless everyone with the sign of the cross. And I'm used to thinking that the Protestant faiths don't use the sign of the cross.
Sure.
But I thought it was still very powerful.
No, yeah. Well, and of course, High Church Anglicanism
that's
reserved.
Right.
Anglo-Catholic.
Yes.
So, St. Cyril of Jerusalem, the great doctor of the church, in 386 in his catechesis, wrote, "Let us therefore not be ashamed of the cross of Christ, but though another hide it, you should openly seal it upon your forehead, that the devils may behold the royal sign and flee trembling far away.
Love it.
Make then this sign at eating and drinking, at sitting, at lying down, at rising up, at speaking, at waking, in a word, at every act."
Beautiful.
You know, and so, I mean, and this is 386, and we know of written, even Tertullian before him, Tertullian dies in 225, he speaks about the sign of the cross being made. So this is one of the most ancient, you know, public kind of signs of the faith and blessing that is done by all people. And this is Cyril encouraging his new, you know, newly baptized people, make the sign of the cross often.
That is really good. Yeah, and a great way in which we can be blessing ourselves as well as blessing others throughout the day. And a good reminder that, what is that line, the verse that says, out of the mouth proceed blessings and curses.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, not to take this with too much gravitas, but in the spiritual warfare sense, if we are not constantly seeking and expressing, receiving, and giving blessings, there's a little bit of a risk that we're doing the opposite, which is curses, and you know, not in the pentagram kind of sense.
right. Sorry, Aleister Crowley, not you.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, in other words, go for it. Go fill one's life with blessings.
Yeah. Yeah, St. Paul encourages, you know, always have you know, good words of encouragement.
Yes, that's
for,
a blessing.
For the other, you know,
a
and that's
very strong.
Exactly.
Blessing.
It's funny you should mention spiritual warfare because when I think of spiritual warfare, I think of Holy Father Benedict.
Yeah.
And by this, I mean St. Benedict of Nursia.
Oh, okay.
Now, I went to a Benedictine college, I think of him as Holy Father Benedict, as I think of Holy Father Francis and Holy Father Dominic.
Right.
St. Benedict, whose name, by the way, Benedictus means blessed.
Ooh, you're right.
St. Benedict, there's a great story of him and the sign of the cross. The monks who first invited him to become abbot over them, who were themselves lazy men, Benedict knew when he accepted the job that his way of life and theirs was incompatible, but he took the job anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And after a little while, the monks decided, we've had enough of this, and they tried to poison him by putting poison in his cup of wine.
Oh, my.
When he went to bless the cup and make the sign of the cross over the cup, it shattered.
I love it.
And then later, a priest who also hated him near his hometown of Subiaco, or near where he was living in Subiaco, tried to poison him with a piece of bread.
Oh,
and when Benedict made the sign of the cross and blessed the bread, a raven came and snatched up the loaf. Both of these, the cup, the broken cup, and the raven, are depicted upon the medal of Saint Benedict, which is also called the Jubilee Medal because it was forged in 1880 on the 1400th anniversary of his birth in 480.
Wow.
next to, and the raven and the cup are kind of at the foot of Saint Benedict. That's on one side of this medal, and on the other side is a huge sign of the cross.
Oh my!
And this is the famous Saint Benedict medal, which is itself has letters that symbolize a curse of Satan. Get away from me, Satan. Oh. Vade retro, Satana. Eat the poison crumb yourself,
right,
or drink the poison cup yourself. So it is a curse of a devil. Get away from me.
Wow.
And a blessing of God, you know, being I know whom I serve.
Right.
And so this is, when I think of spiritual warfare, I think of Saint Benedict and his sign of the cross and that being what saved him from poison.
Wow. Yes.
You know?
And that's a good reminder that a lot of us might think of blessings as simply words that are in a missal or a document that we simply say and poof, it's a blessing. But blessings are very active things.
They are effective.
Yes, blessings have a real element of action.
Yeah.
To them. We are blessing people with our actions as well as with our words, and both of us can definitely groove on that, being wordsmiths in our respective careers, etc.
Yeah.
The words can be a great blessing, but also, like I referred to, they can be a source of cursing. All the more important to use words and gestures very, very wisely and with charity.
I couldn't concur more.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
One last thing about the sign of the cross that actually kind of draws on that, because you're saying, you know, that when we do them well,
right,
when we do them mindfully, they are effective. Right?
Yes.
So it was Pope Innocent III who kind of gave instruction. Now, Innocent III is one of my favorites. He was Pope from 1198 to 1216. He was actually the fellow who gave approbation to and received both Saint Francis and Saint Dominic.
Whoa.
In Rome.
Right.
So they were contemporaries, although it is Saint Honorius, Pope Honorius, who approves the Dominicans. But Innocent was there at the beginning of the 13th century. He wrote about it in an instruction on the sign of the cross itself.
Hmm.
And I want to preface this with, you were talking earlier, the Anglicans make the sign of the cross. We Roman Catholics make the sign of the cross.
Right.
Our Eastern brothers and sisters make the sign of the cross,
yes,
as well. They make theirs not from left to right, but from right to left.
That's right.
And this was the earliest tradition.
Is that right?
And it is actually the West that began to do it left to right. And here's what Innocent wrote in his instruction on the sign of the cross. The sign of the cross is made with three fingers because the signing is done together with the invocation of the Trinity. This is how it is done, from above to below and from the right to the left, because Christ descended from the heavens to the earth and from the Jews, the right, he passed to the Gentiles, the left.
Huh.
Now, while noting the custom of making the cross from the right to the left shoulder was for both the Western and Eastern churches at the time, Pope Innocent continued, quote, "Others, however, make the sign of the cross from the left to the right, because from misery, left, which is also sinister in Latin.
Oh, yes.
From
yes.
misery on the left, we must cross over to glory on the right.
Oh, my.
Just as Christ crossed over from death to life and from Hades to paradise.
Whew.
Some priests do it this way so that they and the people will be signing themselves in the same way.
Oh, my.
So in a mirror image, right? When the priests are blessing, turning around to bless, because of course we would have all been facing liturgically east, but the priest turns around to bless the congregation facing like we think of them doing now,
right,
in the ordinary form of the Mass.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily verify this picture of the priest facing the people for the blessing. When we make the sign of the cross over the people, it is from left to right. So that's what he's saying.
Okay.
Therefore, about this time, the faithful began to imitate the priest imparting the blessing, going from the left shoulder to the right shoulder with the open hand. Eventually, this practice became custom for the Western Church.
Very true. But it still sounds like it has a vaguely dyslexic origins. Could this be a term, a new term, dyslexic discipleship? I don't know. But
I thought you said there would be no humor.
I'm sorry.
I like but, it.
Yeah, no, I do enjoy seeing different signs of the cross, knowing that they all mean the same thing and invoke the same blessing.
There's another common blessing that we experience in our daily life, and that is when people sneeze. It's somebody sneezes, it's Pavlovian, right?
Yeah.
You immediately respond, bless you.
Right.
Without almost any regard to whether or not that person believes in God.
I know. It's awesome. It's right? still, that persists, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. It's one of those crazy things. And it turns out, as I was digging a little deeper into this, that that the Romans, the ancient Romans, used to say, Jupiter preserve you, or salve, which means good health to you.
Huh.
And the Greeks would wish each other long life.
Right.
The phrase, God bless you, is actually attributed to Pope Gregory the Great, whom, of course, you remember was Pope 590 to 604.
I thought that was
You're up on your papal succession orders. But Pope Gregory uttered it in the 6th century during a bubonic plague epidemic. Since sneezing was an obvious symptom of one of the forms of the plague.
So whether
or not that's true. Now, this is, again, we don't know whether or not this is true because it's from Wikipedia. but still, I thought it was an interesting. I mean, we say bless you, and even in our pluralistic society, we say this, right?
I know. It's nice.
Even according to the EEOC compliance manual on religious discrimination, employers may have to accommodate an employee's religious beliefs by allowing an employee to say God bless you in the workplace.
Thank goodness.
The same guy.
That would be a bit extreme.
Quite indulgent, aren't they?
really.
The same guidance also says that where doing so causes a disruption in the workplace or offends customers, then maybe it's an undue hardship to the employer to grant said accommodation. So be mindful.
Yes.
This is where phrases, and I hear this every now and then, have a blessed day. I find it a little cheesy.
Yeah.
But, certainly in different, in different parts of the country where maybe there are more evangelical Christians and this is more of a prevalent, part of the community, it's something you would hear more.
Yes. And there are a lot of cases in which even in our civil society and polity, we don't hold back on talk of God's blessings. And I think of just about every major presidential speech I've ever heard. The president usually ends with God bless America.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. That really still resonates. It's, I think people would agree, even though we have a lot more nuns now. That's N-O-N-E.
Yes, yes.
We have a lot more.
We don't have a lot more of the other kind of nuns.
No, and that's sad. But
sadly.
Yeah, but let's keep going with the with that secular exercise of God bless America and the idea of God being able and ready to bless us, and also seeking out God's blessings, and maybe we'll come around to a more robustly faith-filled country. But I like the fact that our presidents are keeping it going.
No, that's true. Yeah,
And
it still says on our money, "In God We Trust."
Exactly.
Whether or not that's a blessing, "In God We Trust, all others pay cash."
Yeah. Well, I think that simply means that we are not sure that we trust in quantitative easing. So, given the option, we'll trust in God. Am I right?
I like it.
Yeah. That's.
Are you saying Paul Volcker and all of the other Fed chairmen, Fed chairsmen? Which one do you actually?
All the chariots and all the king's chariots and
all the Fed's chariots and chariotettes.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
No,
but,
I don't know about Paul Volcker. He was a giant among men, very, very literally.
I didn't realize he was that tall.
Yes. Yeah. He was big. Yeah. 6'6" or something. So I would have certainly shown him all the proper respect. But then again,
you actually worked in journalism.
Yes, indeed. I covered government and economic affairs and all of that. During that time, as I recall, that was part of his era there.
So and, I'm proud of myself for the Paul Volcker poll then in trivia there. That's good.
Okay,
because that would have been before I would have been conscious because all my life it was Alan Greenspan.
Alan Greenspan, yes. Yeah,
I couldn't even tell you who the current guy is.
I
know that it was Janet Yellen for a while.
Yes.
And she was actually incredibly perfectly qualified for the job too.
Yeah. Now all I know is that they've learned that. Not to say as much publicly as I think they once did. How did we
get onto the Fed?
I don't know, but it's I think it's just an area where we need blessings and welcome blessings.
No, that's true. There's another form to get back. something else that we do sometimes in public, usually certainly at dinner and, certainly at homes, in Catholic homes, grace before meals.
Oh, exactly.
And in religious communities, Thanksgiving after meals, although it's a little more rare on home experiences,
that's not
right?
A tradition really among a lot of lay folks. Yeah.
Yeah, but I know hanging out with the Holy Cross community in their dining room and things like that, there's always, blessings at the end of the meal. And certainly when I was a Dominican, we would have, a communal Thanksgiving, at the end of the meal. Especially on the formal meals, things like that. But there's a prayer that we all know. All Catholics in America seem to be able to recite the same blessing of our meals, right?
Right.
A couple of years ago at the fall conference at the Notre Dame Center for Ethics and Culture, where I work, we had a bishop from Nsukka, Nigeria, come to be with us. And at lunch, we asked him to lead us in grace before the meal, to give a blessing. Mm-hmm. And so he stood up and he said, my name is Bishop Ona. I'm from Nsukka, Nigeria. And I would like to offer a blessing that I bring from my continent.
Uh-huh.
And so we begin in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit. He says, bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord.
Truly
Amen.
A universal church.
Exactly right.
Although he was probably being just very polite. And
it was because we were all ready for something, so hilarious. It's one of those things, they say that the Our Father is one of those things that is so ingrained in us that even a person on their deathbed, when they haven't said anything in days, you begin the Our Father, sometimes they will begin to mouth it or recite it together.
It's awesome. Yes.
And I think the prayer, the grace before meals, is another one of those prayers.
I think you're right.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. And isn't that wonderful that we have things like that get ingrained in us?
There's one other thing that I was thinking about as I was preparing my notes in the last few moments tonight together, I wanted to talk about, and that is something, language quirks.
Okay.
So we talked about blessings. We talked about curses, right?
Right.
We talked about using our language properly and blessing effectively.
Right.
There are things, we don't take the name of the Lord in vain.
Right.
We don't actually curse things. And in American, in our society, we've lost the distinction.
Mm.
Curses literally are those things in which we say that person should be cursed. That person should, and we would say, go to hell, for example. And even to use is something that is blasphemous in many cultures and probably should be in ours, but we've lost that sense, right?
Yeah.
This leads to interesting language quirks, though, too, such as in order to avoid blasphemy, using the name of the Lord or the saints, jeepers creepers.
Yeah.
Or dang.
Right.
Things like this that are not curses, but are meant to evoke curses.
That's interesting.
And of course, these days in our modern culture, we would think of them as you're being a goody two shoes or a fuddy duddy to say those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But even zounds. Have you ever heard the word zounds?
Yes, occasionally.
Zounds is a Middle English term that is short for God's wounds. By God's wounds, meaning the crucifixion wounds of God.
Yeah.
And so zounds was an exclamation I've got to dig deeper into it. But it's funny, when you read your Batman comic books and you see zounds, pow, Biff, maybe pow and Biff not so much, but zounds is one of those that is actually a reference to divinity and to blessing.
Wow. Yes.
So
maybe
we'll post a link to a few of those in the show notes.
That would be fun. I'm sure there are probably good lists.
Class up your language.
Yes.
And, with blessings.
I know that Jeepers Creepers, Where'd You Get Those Peepers is a song I've played on the accordion, and I'm hoping that I haven't committed an act of blasphemy. Some people would say playing the accordion itself is... No, never mind.
No, no, it's a blessing.
Under a blessing,
ears.
Exactly.
It's like a balm in Gilead for my eardrum.
Well said, yes. Yes. Bill, and whenever I play the accordion, I do tend to balm. Sorry.
Bill, this has been, as usual, a delightful conversation.
Well, inspired by the great wisdom and charity and joy of a good companion in conversation. So thank you, Ken.
See you next week.
All right.
The editor sincerely apologizes for the word zounds being pronounced zounds.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation. You can subscribe to hear future episodes at our website, encounterpoints.com. Our theme music is Leaves by Airtone, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution License. We hope to encounter you in the next episode of Encounter Points.